A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, I'm Matt Shawley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Somebody else has been in touch, Fosterman53. Great, but lose the pick, he says. That's his review of the podcast. I've been a regular listener, enjoyed the podcast for about the last year, but honestly have dropped off a bit since you put your mugshot on the cover. Freaks me out a bit. Can you consider changing it, please? Well, I can't change my face. And why are you looking at it while you're listening to the podcast? Surely you just set it playing and then go off and do some other things. Anyway, for now at least, my face is staying as it is. But thank you for listening to Politics About the Boring Bits. Do tell your friends in all the usual ways. Coming up on today's episode, it's a cracker. It's the latest Times Radio focus group. Every month, we ask James Johnson, former number 10 pollster for Theresa May, to sit down with some real voters to get their take on the political scene. Today, it's people who voted Conservative in 2019, now saying they'll vote Labour. But their verdict on Rishi Sunak is brutal. It's not much better for Keir Starmer. They quite like this guy called Nigel Farage. It's a hell of a listen. It'll be brutal listening, actually, whether you're inside Tory HQ or actually advising Keir Starmer. So it's a hell of a listen coming up in just a moment. Before that, Manveen Rana and Matthew Paris on the Tory MPs scrabbling for the exit door and some lucrative jobs after, and office etiquette in 2024. All that coming up on the podcast. And don't forget, if you like what you hear here, you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits on Times Radio. You can listen for free on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits on Times Radio, weekdays from 10. Welcome to day 294 of politicians rewriting history on the post office scandal. After Ed Davey being the single most powerful politician in the country, despite being only a very junior minister in a government with a Conservative Prime Minister who just happens to be back in the cabinet. Well, today we get this from the Energy Secretary, Claire Coutinho, on Sky News.
Why did it take an ITV drama to propel the government into action? Well, I don't think that's the case at all.
No, total coincidence. Total coincidence. The Royals planned to do it this week. It's a total coincidence. Whenever rewriting history, the Commons Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle's getting ahead of himself into the future as he called Keir Starmer to speak.
A very important topic, and I take it seriously. I hope members also wish to start taking it seriously. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker.
Sorry, what was that?
Prime Minister.
Yeah, not quite. I mean, it has to be said, all parties, right across the board. It really is.
New year, new nonsense.
And there's a massive row now, because our social media colleagues put the video of Tim Shipman and I responding to new year, new nonsense. We both basically fell about laughing because it was so bad. There's an argument now going on Twitter about basically how big mine and Tim's faces are. But also, were we laughing because we thought it was good? In which case we're a bunch of lefties, or were we laughing because we thought it was bad, in which case we're a bunch of Tories. So join the conversation wherever you get your podcast.
Manveen Rana and someone called Matthew.
And we are joined in the studio by Manveen Rana, host of the Stories of Our Times podcast. And this week, someone called Matthew is, of course, Matthew Paris. Now, we have to start with the initial housekeeping. Manveen, what deliciousness have you brought us in this week?
I baked a cake.
Did you do it this morning?
It's still warm.
It's still a bit warm.
It's still a bit warm. I baked it this morning.
Matt, it's amazing. It's fresh. It is so
As I get stuck in really unprofessionally eating a massive bit of cake
on the
radio.
It's so lovely.
What is it?
It's a raspberry and amaretti.
Oh, really good.
It's moist.
Moist. It's warm. Mm. It's got a good hard crunch on the outside. But then
we've just morphed into a whole other show.
I'm going to say a much better one.
It is so good.
Oh, you're so kind.
Whose recipe is this, or is it your own?
It's one I've sort of played with for a few years.
Is it? Oh, it is your own.
I've only learned to bake in the pandemic. I had nothing else to do.
Turns out the pandemic was worth it.
Oh. For the baking alone.
Oh, it's so good.
Mm. Oh, you're so lovely. Made my day.
Can we just put adverts on and I'll just sit and eat a cake?
Yeah, we can just sit and munch for 20 minutes.
Well,
happily.
You can do all the heavy lifting on this one, Mambi. There's a really interesting piece today. James Hill's written in The Spectator about, he calls it the Tory Hunger Games, the sort of desperate scramble by MPs, particularly former ministers, to sort of get out and land some well-paid jobs, particularly green ones. That seems to be the big thing. Not least, the former net zero czar, Chris Skidmore, quit as an MP on Friday ahead of a vote this week. Although, actually, amusingly, the vote then didn't happen because Commons business ran out of time. They were supposed to be voting on oil and gas licences. Many of his former colleagues in the Conservative Party were absolutely furious about it, calling him to front the cost of the by-election in his seat of Kingswood. He said he won't even support the Tories. Here he is talking on ITV's Peston.
I think that it's not about personalities. And one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to moving away from politics is it's so ephemeral. It doesn't really matter who wins the next general election. It doesn't really matter what's going to happen in the Kingswood by-election. What matters is whoever is in power commits to decarbonising and taking the climate action that's needed for 2030 and for 2050 now, because we're running out of time. As I said in my resignation statement, I'm now independent. We'll work with all political parties, whoever is going to prioritise what is the issue of our generation.
Matthew, I couldn't help but thinking, he sort of contradicted himself. You can't say it doesn't matter who wins the next election. It matters if they commit to this, isn't it? I mean, it does matter who wins.
Yeah.
Politics, in that case, does matter.
Oh, he's tying himself into a bit of a knot. I resigned in 1986 caused a by-election, frankly, because London Weekend Television had offered me a better job. I wasn't really getting anywhere in politics, and I doubled my salary, and I was going to be a TV star. As we now know, that was not to be. But so far be it from me to criticise Chris Skidmore, but maybe just say this, that once you've decided you want to do something, you justify to yourself your own motives for doing it. So I do not think that Chris Skidmore is thinking, I'm just doing this because I want to get ahead of the others and land a nice cushy job before losing a constituency that anyway is disappearing at the next election. He's not thinking, this is my plan. He's finding reasons within himself why it's a matter of principle, but you have to ask what the incentive to find those reasons is.
That's what's so odd about it, Manveen, is that loads of MPs, dozens, I mean, 50, 60, 70 of them have said they're going to stand out at the next election for all sorts of different reasons. They've been there for a long time. They possibly can't be bothered fighting and thinking they might lose a seat. But his seat literally disappears. I don't understand why he didn't just ride out until October, November. And said he's made all this fuss, and actually now it all seems to be backfiring on him. Everyone now thinks he's looking like a Wally. Yeah.
It is slightly backfiring. I mean, the tiny bit of me that is still an optimist would like to think the reason he's done that, he could have done, we've seen Nadine Dorries, for example, hang on to a job when she clearly wasn't performing it. He could have done that with his other jobs on the side. He chose not to. He seems to have done it on a point of principle. And I know there's this sort of backlash about who should foot the bill of a by-election, but, there was that moment a few years back when David Davis, called a by-election in his own constituency when he was standing again, but again on a point of principle. And I sort of think we've got to be able to do that from time to time. I don't think most people mind footing the bill for democracy.
But what is the principle that he's resigned?
Well, he seems to be saying, if the Tories took the Uxbridge by-election as a sign that people didn't care about green policies, then this is the moment. I mean, I don't think he's right. I don't think anyone voting in this particular by-election is going to be voting just on climate. But I think he is probably right that I think they've misjudged the mood. He came up with the phrase, I became a Conservative to conserve, which I sort of thought wouldn't have been bad for the Tories in the actual election if they'd chosen to take it. But, they've taken the Uxbridge by-election, which they won by a few hundred votes, as licence to start tearing up green policy. And I think that's the point he's making.
The immediate issue that he's resigning about is about the licensing, granting of new licences to drill for oil and gas in the North Sea. And actually, there are very good arguments on both sides with that one. It doesn't seem to me quite the sort of critical tipping point sort of issue that one would normally resign on.
Although if he's taken these side jobs which are about decarbonisation, I guess it's very hard to do them while you're part of a government which is doing the opposite.
Yeah, so then resign the whip and sit as an independent, maybe.
I think he thought as a point of principle you shouldn't do that, you should give the electorate a chance to re-vote, which is fair enough.
Because we had someone from a, I think it was like an energy think tank on earlier this week, who said that actually this law is just virtue signalling. There are already basically annual rounds of new gas and oil. It's just mandating annual rounds.
It's already happening.
It's the old Gordon Brown writing into law something that happens already.
Yeah.
And so it won't actually make any meaningful difference to the amount of gas and oil that is extracted.
But I guess it's virtue signalling in terms of...
Or vice signalling.
Vice signalling, because it's about your sort of direction of travel. Mm. And I guess it's that which would be alarming for somebody who's big on
decarbonisation. I wish we'd all just stop signalling.
I know.
And do something.
Just do.
Unless you're turning right in a car.
Yes.
That's the only time that signalling is necessary. Maybe left. You know, maybe turning left, but definitely if you're turning right. And what about on the bigger question then of green? Because he's clearly tried to put, you know, green policies in front and centre. Labour have got this big £28 billion green pledge that they've sort of watered down a bit. But then at the weekend, Keir Starmer said, if the Tories want to have a fight about this, I'm up for the fight. And he seems to now be leaning into it a bit more and saying that this might be the point of difference going to the election. Do you think it will ultimately, when we come to the election, it'll be that big a deal, Matthew?
Well, I think it is a very big deal for both parties, for the nation and for the future of mankind. But whether it's actually going to be something that persuades many voters on the doorstep, I very much doubt.
I sort of feel like Labour's just taken on the phrase, we're up for the fight, and they're applying it to absolutely everything right now.
You just say, just bring it on.
Bring it on. I keep hearing it, and it sort of means less every time they use it. But I do think people care about environmental policies more than we give them credit for, but I don't think it's the top reason people vote.
Well, you know what, if you were going to offer me some more of that lovely cake, I would definitely say, bring it on. I was about to ask Matthew a question. You haven't got a mouthful.
No.
Let's talk about the post office. You've written this week about the fact that you hadn't written previously about the post office scandal, and I think all journalists, well, according to some people, all journalists are single-handedly responsible for this crisis and scandal. But you've just been reflecting on the fact that it isn't something that crossed your weekly musings.
I've written 6,000 columns since I started writing.
Wow.
for the Times, and I can do a sort of word search through them, and I can't find that I ever mentioned the post office sub postmaster's mistress's scandal. And I certainly noticed it, and I remember thinking, oh, this doesn't look right at all, and then thinking, oh, but it's the post office seemed to be very sure, and oh, it's all about IT, and am I qualified to appraise the Horizon programme? And I ducked, and I wish I hadn't now. And I think all of us columnists who say, why didn't this minister do something? Why didn't that minister do something? Why didn't anybody say anything? We do need to ask ourselves why we didn't either. Some of us, some did.
Yeah.
Private Eye did. Computer Weekly did.
Well, have you had a similar self-reflection, Matt?
Yeah, I have actually. I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think it's partly because the moment you say post office, it's just very unsexy. You know, you sidle up to an editor and say, "I've got this great story. It's on the post office," and immediately their eyes glaze over. But I remember when I first became aware of the scandal. I mean, I do investigations. I was looking for sort of, you know, would this be a good investigation? I thought, there's so much here. It's an amazing story, but it looked like a lot of it had been done already. And I think there's something in sort of journalistic grammar where the moment an inquiry is called, you pause a lot of your digging because you're like, oh, well, it's already being looked after. And there's often sort of, you know, you'll have like a flurry of headlines and a huge build-up, and then the moment the government call an inquiry, it kicks everything into the long grass. It doesn't solve anything, but everyone stops looking. And it feels like that's what happened here a bit too, because, you know, there was this ongoing inquiry. It didn't get any answers for the people who were suffering, who already had for 20 years. But it just sort of stops the urgency of chasing it for journalists, because you think there's an inquiry going on, I can't undermine it.
I also feel like people are saying, oh, why is it taking an ITV drama to bring about this? Well, it's because a drama can pull together 20 years in a way that a page lead or a column is quite hard to...
Yeah.
And I do think the big, you know, although clearly it's unfolded over a long time, the ability to say the post office lied only becomes something that you can repeat in the papers easily after they've had their convictions quashed. Because up until that point, for legal purposes, they had been convicted and some of them had pleaded guilty. I also thought, I don't know if you saw Danny Finkelstein's column this week, will park his question of whether or not Ed Davis should resign. Or maybe you do want to talk about that. But he said the problem with the post office scandal is because it didn't take off because it didn't vindicate anyone's point of view or support anyone's prejudices. He said, imagine the scandal was all the fault of Boris Johnson or all the fault of Jeremy Corbyn. Opponents of one or the other would never shut up about it. If it had been all the fault of Brexit or the post office being woke, if it had been the fault of privatisation or the big state, vaccination or capitalism, if it had been all the fault of one party or the BBC or the mainstream media or MPs' expenses... Or the Empire, or racism, or Israel. We'd never heard the last of it. Instead, it was a bit everyone's fault.
And general apathy.
Yeah.
Do you think there was an element of racism in the general apathy? An awful lot of sub-postmasters and sub-postmistresses are Asian. I just wonder whether that... No one's obviously going to admit that they thought, well, maybe there is some...
I wonder whether it might be metropolitanism... because it's a very provincial story. Mm. It's pillars of communities that I wonder how many national newspaper editors, radio presenters know their sub-postmaster and go into their local post office. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, it's a world which feels... I remember a similar thing when I was at the West One News writing a lot about the Rural Payments Agency. Actually, that was another scandal. It was a terrible IT system and farmers weren't getting money they were supposed to be getting. And there was... tales of farmers who'd committed suicide and they'd gone bankrupt and lost everything. But, you know, it never took off nationally because nobody in a national newsroom knows any farmers who aren't getting there.
Yeah.
You know, it feels provincial and distant and, well, it's interesting to farmers, not interesting to anyone else. So I just wonder whether there's a bit of that going on.
Yeah, no, I think there probably is. I think you're right. I think it is much more sort of... you know, post offices are such an important hub of the community if you're outside London. If you're inside London, you probably don't even notice the people you're having to speak to. So you're right. I think there was probably a bit of it doesn't apply to us. There was also, as Matthew sort of says, IT. People don't understand that. Post office itself, not very glamorous. Lots of reasons why it didn't take off. But, you know, ultimately, you know, Danny's right. There's also a preference for these stories that feed into one prejudice or another at the moment and which side of the debate you're on. You know, ultimately, this is an everyman story. Sort of, you know, an ordinary people who are working hard, finding the entire system collapsing around them. You know, it's Kafkaesque. And I think that's what the drama does so well. It just sort of just reminds you that it could be any one of us who are doing all the right things. And especially if you are one of those provincial submasters, it's not only your money, your pension, you're having to find money you don't have to pay back debts. You're also losing your name in a community that is small, where you're trusted and suddenly...
And widely known.
And widely known, and suddenly everyone's pointing fingers. I mean, it's horrific on a very human level.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the drama's been so effective.
And it's all a sort of, you know, you watch it thinking, well, that could happen to anyone.
Yeah.
You know, a state system failure against you for whatever your interaction is, whether the way you pay your tax or your, you know, whatever.
It's technology, which we rely on. It's the state. And there's something about big firms where you just assume that there are so many levels of management it must go through that itself must be a filter. You know, surely big firms don't just turn around and collectively... lie or hide things.
And as well as lamenting the fact that it took a television documentary to get the nation really aroused on this, perhaps we should celebrate the fact that good television journalism can make a big difference.
Can still do it. And actually, I know some people in the industry have been making this point that actually... Because I think I heard was the producer or the director was saying how they'd really struggle to get it made.
I bet, yes.
And they had to like plead with the actors to... basically not be paid very much to do it because, you know, ITV probably correctly guessed they're not going to sell this around the world like Broadchurch or something like that. So, yeah, it's another... Hopefully they'll, you know... I imagine we'll now be an absolute slew of every possible government IT failure now becoming a TV drama. Somebody tries to win a BAFTA. Now, I want to ask you about your office etiquette. Are you good colleagues? Do you abide by the new rules? Keep your office jokes and banter off your emails, is the advice of Dr. Emma Russell, speaking on the Instant Genius podcast. She's an organisational psychologist. It just clutters up your inbox, reduces productivity, and you should put it in your WhatsApp groups instead. I'm not sure that necessarily improves productivity. Olivia Petter disagrees, writing in Times 2 today, that having virtual water cooler chat is safe in your emails. Hi, Olivia.
Hello.
So explain what should we be doing in our emails and what should we be doing in our WhatsApps?
I mean, I think we should be really having very clear boundaries between professional and personal in terms of how we communicate. I think WhatsApp should very much be left to personal chats, group chats with friends, and then emails are your place to talk to colleagues. And then if you want to kind of have those little gossip sessions with your colleagues that, you know, this woman's encouraging us to have on WhatsApp, I think do them in person. Do them the old-fashioned way. And then they're not traceable. They're not written down. And they're less distracting. I think, you know, we already get so much anxiety from WhatsApp in terms of our friendships and our personal life. We don't need to add that to our work life and blur those boundaries even more and then risk saying something inappropriate to our colleagues or, you know, risk something that's, you know, misunderstood. It just creates a whole load of more social anxiety that I don't think we need at work.
My counter-argument would be most of my work discussions take place in work WhatsApp groups. So we've got one for the show, there's one for the Times lobby team, there's, you know... But I'd say they are mostly more professional than, you know, the other friend group ones. Isn't the problem with email just the way it works? I email everyone and say, we should do this on the show. And then somebody else has to reply, good idea. And then someone else has to reply later, oh, I've done this. And then and then somebody else replies to an earlier one in the thread. And you just don't know where you are and your inbox is cluttered up.
Yeah, I think there's a real difference between work WhatsApp groups that I need to point out here. So I think, yes, a lot of people do have WhatsApp groups among colleagues that are strictly professional. But a lot of people, particularly in the sector I work in, and particularly people my age who I've spoken to, have WhatsApp groups with colleagues that are a bit more casual in nature.
Yeah.
And they're kind of ostensibly for work, but also not really. And there's less clarity in it. Whereas I think in email, you've got more clarity, like you know that you're emailing from a work address to another work address. Whereas on WhatsApp, I think it's less clear sometimes. And that's where we get into slightly tricky territory, I think.
What about you, Matthew? Are you full of banter on WhatsApp?
Yes, anywhere where humour is allowed,
yeah.
I enjoy. And also WhatsApp is very useful professionally for communicating informally with people, things that you don't want to see written down. You can use those WhatsApps that expire after 7 days or so.
What about you, Babby?
Yeah, I mean, we use it quite a bit. It tends to be mainly professional with just like the odd joke here and there. But I do think, I think we tend to think of them as things that expire and are slightly ephemeral. But as the Tory WhatsApp groups have sort of shown, you know, people are constantly screenshotting them and they're turning up all over the press. And there is something about it as a format that allows people to... I mean, I assume from the leaks we get from the Tory WhatsApp group to just say things that are so, you know, are sort of slightly stupider than you would commit to an email.
And I suppose the point that you're making, Olivia, is that because when you're looking, scrolling through your WhatsApps, you have got your friends and your family ones, and then the work ones appear in between, just means that there's a degree of informality. And you just need to think twice about who it is
exactly
that you're broadcasting to.
Exactly. And I think with any form of instant messaging, you know, you're encouraged to kind of be much more impulsive in your communication style. And that doesn't necessarily suit a professional environment.
Yeah.
So I think it does benefit to kind of take time away and be a bit slower and more considered in how you speak to your colleagues. Because, you can easily say something without thinking and regret it.
Olivia, really good to speak to you. Olivia Petter there. Her piece is in Times 2 today. Actually, I set up the Press Gallery WhatsApp group. It's got now 250 or 300 people in it. And then alongside, someone had to set up the lobby banter group because...
separate it out.
Yeah, so there's information about what's happening today in politics, but, you know, if you want to do your jokes, go elsewhere.
Manvi Rana, of course, you can catch on the Stories of Our Times podcast wherever you're listening to this, and read Matthew Powis in The Times. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk. Up next is The Focus Group.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Big Thing.
Labour are, what, 15, 20 points ahead in the polls. But how strong is that lead? What do voters really think about the main parties and their leaders? All the political parties will be doing opinion polling to get a representative sense of what is going on in the country. All political parties will also be doing focus groups to ask voters in their own words to get a qualitative sense of where they are politically, what they think about how the government is doing, and the political alternatives. So every month on Times Radio since June 2020, we've been carrying out our own focus groups and bring them to you here on the show. They're always run by James Johnson, now from JL Partners, who used to be the man who ran focus groups and polling in Number 10. And James joins us now. Hi, James.
Hi, Matt.
Good to have you with us. Just where are you in the world, James?
I am in deepest Iowa in the snow. It's very early here, but my dedication to Times Radio means that I'm here, Matt.
Well, we appreciate that. We appreciate that. Can we start with the legal disclaimer? What is a focus group and what is it not?
So this is particularly important because we've had a bit of a Twitter meltdown this morning, Matt, in response to the focus group, which I'm sure we'll soon see why. Look, focus groups are not intended to be representative. That's what polling is there for. So if you hear people today expressing opinions on someone, then that does not necessarily mean that that is the view of all of the group that the focus group is studying. What it allows us to do is work out what kind of things and sort of attributes do people sort of, you know, like, or what phrases do they use, or what are the sort of, you know, the way that they're approaching the next election. We always have to be careful about generalizing that out to a group for the reasons I've said. That's what polling is there for. But it does allow us to see how someone or a party or whatever it might be able to shift the dial with voters. And that's absolutely key. We're not sitting here today saying, look, this is what an entire group thinks. We're saying this is important because under the surface, these are the things that could well change opinion and indeed give us a sense of perhaps how strong that double-digit Labour lead you mentioned really is.
And we should explain, they are always different people. We don't have the same, as some people have been accusing me this morning on Twitter, it's not the same eight people every month who've just got their views and we repeat them. So it's different people. But having done them every month, it is possible to see, you know, the same messages coming up. It's the same things that the party will be getting up. Just explain who are the people who are on the group this month, their voting background and where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're speaking to switchers this month, that by that I mean people who voted Conservative in 2019, that gave Boris Johnson that 80-seat majority, but they're now saying they'd vote Labour. So they've already switched from Conservative to Labour. And we spoke to them in three constituencies in the so-called Red Wall, Wakefield, Burnley, and Wolverhampton North East.
Right, let's dive in then. That's all the caveats out of the way. I'm sure people still keep raging on Twitter as having discovered that some members of the public don't agree with them. It's extraordinary. We started the focus group. You always ask them to sort of warm them up, to ask them what it is in the news that they've spotted. We don't always use it because it's normally just a way of just getting them going, and sometimes it could be a bit esoteric. But this just shows the power of when one story does get unusual levels of cut through. So this is what the group said had caught their eye in the news.
It's around the post office scandal due to the television.
It's the post office scandal.
The post office scandal is dominating the news at the moment.
The Jeffrey Epstein scandal, post office scandal, quite rightly is dominating, and so it should be.
The post office scandal.
Yes, the post office scandal.
Yes, the post office scandal.
That's cut through for you. And they also knew that a former minister was being blamed for it. So, James, you asked them this.
Does anyone in the group know who that minister you guys mentioned was? Ooh. Conservative? Labour? Lib Dem?
Oh, it was Lib Dem. I think it was Lib Dem. We've been talking about it at lunch today.
Well, so we should make clear that was Tuesday night. Maybe the cut through on Ed Davies improved since then. But James, it's just a reminder that actually big stories can. I mean, that's. I can't remember a time when the entire group, because they could mention anything in the news, have almost all named the same story.
Yeah, especially for a domestic UK thing. Sometimes you get a big sort of, you know, international disaster, or for example, you know, the October 7th attacks in Israel, where everybody's aware. But this is the first time for quite a long time where we've had a uniform response on a UK political development. Yeah, absolutely. Look, it just gets at that sense of unfairness. And, you know, for all of the talk about the mainstream media being dead, it was that TV documentary that did it.
Yeah.
You know, the ITV show has got people engaged in this, got people very exasperated. It's clearly there's a big political advantage for Labour and the Conservatives in being able to plant this at Ed Davies' door. They haven't been able to do so yet, but perhaps the kernels of starting to do so there in the group when they said a Lib Dem.
Let's park Ed Davies for a moment. Let's turn our attention to Rishi Sunak. Remember, these are people who voted Conservative in 2019. They're now saying they're going to vote Labour. You asked them to sum up Rishi Sunak in one word.
Out of touch.
I've got out of touch, but I also put rich as well.
I put rich. He's not in touch with the common person.
He never answers a question.
I put rich as well.
Untrustworthy.
Loves himself.
Out of touch, rich, and out of touch and rich. That's not great, James.
No, it's not. And look, Rishi Sunak's always had this problem to an extent. Voters have known for a long time that he's more rich than them, that he's got a very wealthy family background. But it didn't necessarily always used to matter. Now it really matters. And voters see that as a problem. They see that as a reason that he can't work for them effectively. And I think that's partly because, you know, they question his broader competence. That's made it matter more. I think they've seen more of these snippets of clips and viral images, you know, the paying with the contactless card being the obvious one where he couldn't quite work out how to do that. And that's just a real barrier. So we saw Keir Starmer attacking him on that and PMQs. We're past the point, I think, where voters sit back and go, oh, it doesn't matter what someone's background is. They seem to now think that is a real problem about Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer's attack. Maybe it's being informed by the focus groups, but it's certainly going to have an impact if he carries on landing those blows.
So it's pretty bad for Rishi Sunak. Number 10's latest strategy is to get in front of as many real people as possible with his PM Connect events. So let's find out how the group thought they came across when you played him a clip and they saw him on TV.
The way his mannerisms and way he acts and everything, I just think he must look in the mirror every morning and say, God, you're gorgeous.
I don't think I've ever seen him give a genuine straight answer.
It's all well and good doing visits, but how about you just do real visits that aren't televised?
You know, they are. It is completely staged. So I don't really trust anything I see in the media regarding politics.
Does seem to be an act.
Yeah, he's false. He's so incredibly false. The guy just makes me cringe. He's cringeworthy. I mean, Truss was bad, but at least she had the decency to resign after just a short period of time.
Which isn't, again, I suppose that's all speaking to the problems with the image that Rishi Sunak projects. So they don't trust him. But they're also alive to the fact that there's going to be a budget cut. They're sort of cynical. I suppose that's the thing, is that the voters, we talk about them being manipulators or change of strategy there, and how's that going to go over the voters? Quite often they can see what they're up to, James. So this was, they were talking about what they think is coming down the track. They know an election's on the way, and so they expect a budget giveaway.
I'd say the next budget, there'll be things that you're like, oh, that's good. But then what about all the other budgets? And I think any promises now, sort of this year, whatever he comes out and says, you know it's a sweetener.
Why would you trust them, though? Because they give you a budget, they tell you things, and then they change it after they've promised it.
That's really interesting, isn't it, James? There's lots of talk in Westminster about when will Rishi Sunak announce his game-changing tax cuts. These are normal people going down about their business. They already know. It's priced in. Of course they're going to do that. Can we believe them? You know, the even if they did do that, it's not actually definite that there'll be any electoral advantage for the Tories.
I think that's right. These voters have extremely low trust in politicians. The latest Ipsos Mori tracker on trust showed it was at its lowest ever, about half the level that we sort of trust that we saw in the expenses scandal nearly 15 years ago now. So this is a real problem for Rishi Sunak, because I think there's a school of conservative thought in the Conservative Party that sort of thinks tax cuts is going to be their saviour, potentially maybe a big ticket change of tax, for example, inheritance tax or stamp duty or something like that may shift the dial. But if they think that income tax, national insurance, income tax thresholds, even if they're big changes, are going to change things for their electoral fortunes, they're mistaken. Voters can see right through it. It's not also not necessarily what they're looking for. On the election visits there, there's another problem for Rishi Sunak, in that he's not seen in a positive light by voters. Now, it's worth saying that we played a clip later when he's talking, and we'll get onto it, I'm sure, or at least on the substance, when he's talking about, you know, Labour going back to square one, and voters quite like Rishi Sunak's style there.
Yeah, no, because of his argument. In fact, we've got that clip next, James. So this all like comes across, you know, all very bad. And so as the group was unfolding, we were sort of sitting there thinking, but this idea of the Tories running a presidential campaign where it's all Rishi Sunak and it's all him out and about, it's a terrible idea. They ought to lock him up. He's so unpopular. But then you played them a quick clip of him speaking, and the reaction sort of turned on a sixpence. Let's take a listen to that.
Now, the choice facing our country at that election is, do we stick with the plan that is starting to deliver the long-term change that our country needs, or do we go back to square one?
To me, he was inspiring then. He was certainly getting me thinking, yes, come on, yeah, that's what we want.
He had the enthusiasm to make you believe what he's saying.
Was staged.
Yeah, that, you know, you're looking at their body language, and there was such a lack. Although he was coming across as passionate, the people around him didn't believe a word he was saying.
I was getting dizzy watching him spin around.
Confident, powerful.
It was a good delivery.
Yeah, he will look very confident, but he uses his hands a lot.
I love it's a reminder of what voters actually focus on. So, James, in terms of what the Tories would do with this, you know, assuming that if they're doing focus groups, they might well be hearing similar things. Maybe it's having done some of those clips and getting a reaction might be encouraging them to send Rishi Sunak. I ended up thinking, I don't know what I would do with Rishi Sunak now. They think he's out of touch, rich, hopeless, and yet then they quite like him when they see him being a bit confident, albeit waving his hands around too much.
I think it's a style thing. I think I think that when they see him sort of, you know, bouncing around these events and
laughing and cracking jokes and you know, playing bowls or whatever, I think they recoil. But when they see him serious like that, getting a serious point across on something they agree with, then the picture changes. So, you know, Sunak doesn't sort of need locking away, but perhaps he needs a ban on smiling, Matt. Perhaps that's what I'd do if I were number 10. You know, he needs to be levelling these serious points. That's the only sort of, you know, iota of faith they might have in him, that he can, he's sort of, you know, vaguely got a plan and might be a bit more serious than Starmer. So ban the smiling, get the plan out there. But otherwise, it's you know, difficult to see Rishi Sunak winning over many hearts and minds with his visits.
And remember, these, in terms of, you know, if you placed all the voters along the spectrum, you know, these are the people who voted Conservative last time. Some of them might have done it a few times. So, in terms of peeling them back, they should be the ones closest. You know, hardcore Labour voters probably aren't going to switch back, but they should be the ones there. We've just had a message in from Peter. Says the focus group. That's the problem with UK politics. The public are just so thick and inarticulate. I don't know if Peter's being sarcastic or not. I sort of hope he is, because these are just normal people who are going to vote in the next election. So James Johnson from JL Partners, let's turn our attention then to Keir Starmer. What did the group think about Keir Starmer? Remember, these are people who voted Conservative in 2019. They now say they're backing Labour. That's why they were recruited. Here's what they had to say, summing up the Labour leader in a word.
Boring.
I've just put opposition. That's all I know of him, really.
Bit weak.
Better than Sunak.
I have no opinion of him because I don't know him that much.
He's a bit spineless sometimes.
I don't know him very well.
I mean, it's amazing that we've still got "I don't know him very well" after nearly, 4 years in the job. And then you asked them what it was about Keir Starmer that might put them off.
I don't know what he stands for. And when I listen to him, I do switch off because I find it mundane and boring. It's just a monotone of saying what the other people have done wrong, not what they're going to do to make it better.
Now, he moves the goalposts daily on what he stands for. I don't think he's the man to run the country. However, I do think his number two could be Angela Rayner. She seems to have some real steel and guts about her. He has no X factor.
He doesn't seem challenging. And he doesn't seem to have enough presence.
James, it's interesting that, there's quite a lot to unpack there. The mention of Angela Rayner, we've had that a couple of times in focus groups, sort of people have picked that up. Remember, you just need to remind yourself that these are people who said they're going to vote Labour, and yet they're so down on Keir Starmer.
Yeah, they're voting Labour despite Keir Starmer, not because of him. They're infuriated with the Conservatives' record. And they are at least warm about the Labour brand. But Keir Starmer is not an obstacle because they're still voting Labour for now. But he's someone that you sort of, you know, they need to hold their nose a bit when it comes to voting for them. And I think the reason why, Matt, and it's links into the Angela Rayner comment there, is that if there's a number one ingredient that voters are looking for in the 2020s, in 2024, it's strength. It's this sense of they'll say it how it is. They'll get things done. I mentioned at the start of the show, I'm in Iowa this week, and I've been doing interviews here ahead of the caucus on Monday. And it's exactly the same when you talk to voters about Trump. The reason they like Trump more than Ron DeSantis and is because of strength. They say he's not a typical politician. He'll say it how it is. He'll get things done. And that's how they feel about Angela Rayner and how they don't feel about Keir Starmer. So that's the problem, really. If Starmer is a reason not to vote for Labour rather than a reason to vote for it.
But maybe when they see him out and about speaking, like Rishi Sunak, they were big fans of Rishi Sunak, but then when they saw the clip of him speaking, they came round. So maybe this will happen when you play them a clip of Keir Starmer.
I will say, you're right to be anti-Westminster, right to be angry about what politics has become. But hold on to the flickering hope in your heart that things can be better.
There's an old programme, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It reminds me of Marvin the Paranoid Android. He's
Marvin.
Just so monotone. He's so monotone. It's just not inspiring at all.
Yeah, I agree with that. He needed a bit more fire in his belly when he was speaking.
Mm. I'd have switched off.
He wasn't convincing.
When he said reject Westminster, doesn't he work and get paid by Westminster too?
That last point is particularly, well, just because I agreed with it, so I'm going to be, this idea of him trying to cast himself as being outside Westminster is always struck me as a bit odd, James. But it's interesting, isn't it? They were so down on Rishi Sunak, and they came round when they heard him speaking. They were a bit down on Keir Starmer, and it sort of made things worse when they listened to the clip of him.
Yeah, totally, and it sums up what we've heard in one of our most, you know, one of our other Times Radio focus groups, Matt, where somebody said, I just don't like his face. It's unfortunate for Keir Starmer, but that's quite a hard thing to change. Look, maybe when they tune in come a general election, Starmer can refresh his image a little bit, mix things up. But at the moment, it's hard to see how that changes. It's worth saying, though, he's not offensive to them.
Yes.
They're not recoiling like they did with Jeremy Corbyn. They just don't much like him, but they're not so horrified they won't vote Labour.
Exactly. They are willing to hold their nose rather than be put off. So they don't like Rishi Sunak. They're pretty unenthusiastic about Keir Starmer. When forced to make a choice, who would these voters prefer? Who do they think would make the better Prime Minister?
Starmer out the two. I think Sunak's had a chance. And quite frankly, in 14 months, he's taken the country backwards. But only just. It's almost saying, you know, who's the best looking guy in the Burns unit? Neither really, you know.
I mean, there's a quote in the film Manton and Commander, and I think it's just the better of the two Weebles. Keir's slightly better.
It would be easy to say neither. I think Rishi Sunak's had his chance, and I wouldn't like to see him there in the future, but I don't think Keir Starmer is the answer.
If you were saying parties, Labour Party, but just on Prime Minister alone, I don't know. I don't know what damage it's going to do to have somebody that hasn't got their own agenda and all they want to do is bounce off somebody else.
Well, I would go Keir purely for the fact of I wouldn't want Rishi.
James, there's a lot there. The best looking guy in the Burns unit is one of the most brutal things I've heard in one of these groups. Somebody really put their finger on it there, though, saying that if it was just Keir on his own and not Labour, really drawing that distinction, that they're voting Labour despite him, not because of him.
Yeah, and look, we warned at the start of this focus group, it's not representative, so we need to have take some of this with a pinch of salt. Switchers tend to be more positive about Starmer than the population overall. But we've heard it enough times now, swing voters focus groups know that there is clearly some concern here. And as we said, these clips and these moments with these politicians, this exposure can shift the dial with people. Mm. Absolutely. There is that frustration there. Plan kept coming up there. What does he stand for? That's Labour's biggest weakness at the moment. And we've heard a few briefings from Labour HQ saying, you know, well, we'll set that out later. We don't need to set it out now. I think every time Keir Starmer does a speech now, I think it is worth considering on the comments said in this focus group and others. If he's not setting out detail and a clear, relatable plan, then that is a real problem for Keir Starmer, because quite frankly, voters aren't ready to wait anymore. They want the detail from him now, and they're starting to make up their minds that perhaps the reason he's not saying any is because he doesn't have any.
And it's because actually Labour's saying, we've got loads of policy, we've said loads of stuff, but the problem is it's all wrapped up in, what, five missions? He's on a missions tour. And actually, maybe it's about, you know, encapsulating that, being a man with a plan, you know, David Cameron's long-term economic plan, Boris Johnson's Get Brexit, you know, boiling things down a bit, the Tony Blair's pledge card and all of that, boiling things down into some clear specifics and talking about having a plan. So it might just be he doesn't need any more policies, just needs to present them slightly differently. Just to round off on the focus group then, James, you asked him about some other politicians. These focus groups, obviously people are in different parts of the country, so it's all done on Zoom. And you put up a picture of the leader of Reform UK, Richard Tice. Does anyone know who he is?
Do you not know them?
No. No.
He looks like a bit of a film star.
Say, I thought he was someone out of Home and Away or Neighbours.
So no, I think is the answer. They don't know who he is. They think he's from Home and Away or Neighbours. And then you send them a picture of someone else, the honorary president of Reform UK. Do they know who that is?
I didn't take him seriously. until watching him on I'm a Celebrity. And what I mean by that is I didn't actually know what he did because of how he came across on Good Morning Britain or whatever else, you know, dressed in a Union Jack hat and coat. He seemed like he just wanted to make a mockery of things. But actually, I think he now challenges politics to try to make it better.
He challenges the issues that the government are falling short on. He challenges the issues that Labour and Keir Starmer are falling short on. I admire the fact that he has got that bit of bullshitness about him.
I think if he was to stand, there are a good percentage of the population that would vote for him.
Nigel's come across on the telly and he's made himself relatable again by being at that face.
So that was, of course, their views on Nigel Farage. Astonishing, James, they thought his appearance on... They've gone up in his estimations as a more serious politician by appearing on I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah, I think that helped with his relatability. I think they knew that he was plain speaking, but they didn't know that he was potentially... they didn't feel like he was in touch with them. I'm a Celebrity seems to have changed that. That's reflected in the polling as well. This is the issue that's got most people frustrated on Twitter, Matt. People saying, you know, how could you possibly argue that, you know, Farage is popular with these voters? The polling doesn't bear it out. Well, in fact, polling does bear it out. We asked 2019 Conservative voters what they thought about Nigel Farage after he came out of the jungle. He's actually got a net approval rating among that group of plus 20. So 48% of people who are Conservative 2019 voters said they had a positive view of him. Now, these are Conservative 2019 voters. Yes, they've switched to Labour, but it's not inconceivable that a good portion of these you would expect, based on the polling, to have positive views of Farage. So, you know, firstly, we're not trying to say it's representative, but secondly, it may well be. So this is something really important because Farage is on the sidelines. If he comes in, you could see with this group alone, he could cause some real damage. Because the one thing that Keir Starmer and Labour want to do this year is get back their relationship, you know, make up and tie the knot again with the voters who left them in 2019. If they lose that connection, they go off to another party, then they're going to be harder to get back in the long term. And indeed, if Rishi Sunak loses votes to Reform UK, then it really is all over for him.
So we've got, like you said, the video, the Nigel Farage video has gone wild with lots of people saying this is all nonsense. You need to look at the polling first. If you look at the polling, Nigel Farage is really unpopular. Dave says, mate, you've had focus groups on for years being pro-Tory and against Labour. Use a Tory pulse to promote your agenda when discussing focus groups. Although, if you've listened to any of our focus groups, you think they're pro-Tory. I think there's something wrong with your ears. This is just how people talk about politics. It's really, really bad for Rishi Sunak in a way it was at this time last year. But the general sense with Keir Starmer, they think he's a bit underwhelming. They don't know much about him, and they don't warm to him, and they're not very enthusiastic about him. That's been a recurring theme for certainly the last 2 or 3 years. James, just finally then, your advice to Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer.
Rishi Sunak, stop smiling. Keep it serious. Stress your plan versus your opponent not having a plan. Maybe prep for that California retirement. Keir Starmer, he's got to put detail on the bones, and he's not only got to put detail on the bones, but he's got to make it relatable to voters. He's got to make it, you know, Labour Tony Blair style pledge card. Five things, perhaps. Relatable, real things, not broad, you know, wishy-washy statements, missions, but five things that are going to change people's lives in after 2 years of a Labour government.
No, I think that's right. Those, you know, not, you know, a better, more opportunity for everyone. You want, you know, we'll put up this by that much, or we'll give these people that thing, so you can read understand. James, it's always fascinating. Best of luck in Iowa. What's going to happen in Iowa while we've got you and your American experience?
It's very difficult, but it looks like we're going to have a pretty hefty win for Trump. Some of the voters I've been speaking to, he's the incumbent to them. They think he's already the nominee for them, really, and they're going to go out and vote for him. Matt, I spoke to a nudist yesterday.
It's a bit cold for that, isn't it, in Iowa?
You'd think so. He was 69 years old, practicing nudist. and he is going to go out and caucus for Trump. I hope so, in clothes.
If you found that interesting, you can search for Times Radio Focus Group for all of our previous focus groups with voters that date back all the way to June 2020, and it's been quite the ride. And we'll have another one of those at the same time next month. Don't forget to get in touch. You can email matt@times.radio or post a review about my face wherever you're listening to this. But for now, for me, Matt Jolly, it's goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.